When Corey Johnson and Ray Reed took over Kentucky Downs in 2007, they were handed the reins of a track that had had financial problems and was little more than a blip on the radar when it came to the national racing scene. Today, Johnson, the president and part owner of Kentucky Downs, oversees a meet where the purses are huge, the takeout is low, and the racing is so good that everyone is taking notice. Corey Johnson is this week's guest on the Thoroughbred Daily News podcast, brought to you by TaylorMade.
Why do TaylorMade horses sell for nearly double the market average? A history of success, honesty, and hard work. For over 40 years, buyers and sellers alike have trusted TaylorMade as the industry's top source for high-quality thoroughbreds and friendly service. While sellers get top dollar for their horses, buyers are rewarded for top results on the track. From sale toppers to Grade 1 winners to Breeders' Cup champions, think TaylorMade, the worldwide leader in thoroughbred sales and marketing.
Welcome back. This is Bill Finley, the host of the TDN's weekly podcast, and we're pleased to be joined by Corey Johnson, one of the persons behind one of racing's most impressive and unique success stories. Kentucky Downs, the home of maiden races that go for $130,000, allowance races that are worth $145,000, and a very lucrative stakes program, is the subject of today's podcast. And welcome, Corey. And let's go back to what we started with in the introduction in 2007, when you and Ray Reed purchased Kentucky Downs. You bought a track that few saw much potential in. Obviously, the two of you saw otherwise, and tell us why.
Actually, we ran a horse at Kentucky Downs in 2006. Her name was Honey Rose, and she was a Grade 1 stakes winner from Argentina. She came to North America, was trained by Todd Pletcher, and her first race in North America was at Kentucky Downs. And so it was the first time I'd ever visited, and I said, this place is a treasure. This place is great, and especially considering the location where Kentucky Downs is just 35 miles from Nashville, I said, this is it. And Ray had actually been encouraging me to put together a group and buy a horse track somewhere in America. And when we came here, we said, this is the one. Then we had to arrange for a meeting with Brad Kelly. And Brad Kelly, to his credit, met us right away. And he basically said this. He said, I've checked you guys out, and you check out fine. And I believe that you can take Kentucky Downs the next step. And I want you just to promise me two things, that you'll do what's right for Simpson County, which is the local county where Brad was raised, and you do what's right for the thoroughbred industry in Kentucky. And he says, I think you guys will do this, so I'll sell you the track. And so basically, the rest is history from there.
And Corey, when you bought the track in 2007, of course, you did not have the instant racing or historical racing machines. They came in 2011. And looking back to that day when you sat down with Brad Kelly and you guys decided to buy the racetrack, was that part of your thinking? Did you foresee them coming to Kentucky Downs at all? Or was that just sort of an added benefit that came along later?
No, gaming revenues, alternative gaming revenues, was at the top of the list. I mean, I just be honest about that, because it's very difficult to make money when you only race 5 or 10 days, and you know the simulcasting situation in Kentucky is such that you have to share half of your net commissions with the host track, which is the track running live at that time. So it's very difficult to make money in that scenario. So as I'm sure you would imagine, it was a long walk in the desert, you know, those first 4 or 5 years. We thought we had a chance to get casino gaming or some type of gaming, and there just were so much politics in the way, so many, you know, different situations that didn't happen. But due to some foresight with people like Senator Damon Thayer and the Attorney General at the time, Jack Conway, and many, many others, Governor Beshear obviously was important, we were able to take a regulatory approach towards gaming. And that's where we came up with pari-mutuel wagering on historical horse racing.
Mm-hmm. Corey, historical racing has been somewhat hit or miss across the country. In some markets like yours, it's been a huge success. In other markets, not such a big success. Also, it seems to be that even where they do work well, they seem to take time to catch on. That's what the people at the Red Mile in Keeneland are experiencing right now, though things are looking up there all the time. So how about that? You know, what about these historical race machines, that they work better in some places than others? And the public is a little bit wary at first.
Yes, let me explain that, because after 5 or 6 years, I understand that concept totally. We've done, obviously, a lot of research. We have found that 90% of our patrons, our gaming patrons, are casino regulars. What I mean by that is once or twice a year, they go to Tunica, they go to Las Vegas, they go to Evansville, they go to Paducah. They go to casinos. And since we are closer, they come to our facility. And what happens is, Bill, it's they are used to playing certain slot machines and they have their favorite games. Well, those slot machine games are not at Kentucky Downs because of its historical horse racing. Now, this is absolutely not an indictment on the product. Our product holds up very, very well. And once people find, I'll call it their favorite games, then we compete with any other gaming product out there. So that's what you have to deal with in virtually every market. And that's what they're dealing with at the Red Mile in Keeneland. And what you'll find is their growth is very similar to the growth that we had. It just takes a while. Let me give you one other example why that kind of drove home. About April of 2015, through a number of circumstances, we changed gaming systems. We went to the Exacta Systems type of historical horse racing. It took 90 days for our existing patrons to learn the new system, learn what their favorite games were. And so that's a fact. It just takes a while, but the product is really, really a good product. And I would tell you that if you go to Wyoming, they're doing fantastic in Wyoming. So I'm comfortable with the product. Is just going to take some time in some of these new markets.
Mm-hmm. And Corey, so the instant racing or historical racing machines, they started off at Oaklawn Park. Really nobody afterwards was that all that bullish on them. But now you're seeing not just in Kentucky, you mentioned Wyoming, I believe they're in Idaho. I don't know what the status of that is, that they are catching on at racetracks around the country, at least ones that don't have traditional casinos and slot machines. So where do you see this going forward? How much of a part of racing do you think these historical racing machines will be in the future, not just in Kentucky, but, you know, throughout the country?
Yeah, it's okay. So it's going to take a while. And let me just explain why I say that. As you know, we all started with Win Play Show, and we might have a daily double and an exact at tracks. And then in 1978, we passed the Interstate Wagering Act. Now, I would ask you, Bill, when did simulcasting, as we call it, really catch on? Well, it was 15, 20 years later in the 90s is when simulcasting really caught on. And then in the 90s, you would remember, there were people with ODS technology / TVG running around saying, hey, we have this new product, advanced deposit wagering, where you can wager from your home. Even though that was introduced in the 90s, it took until probably another 15 years to fully develop that product and make it popular. And now it's an invaluable part of our distribution system for our product. So I believe that historical horse racing was started in the early 2000s, but it really was just at Oaklawn. And beginning in 2011, when we introduced it at Kentucky Downs, was kind of the starting point. So I am hopeful that in the next 10 to 15 years, it will be as an important revenue source as simulcasting or ADW. Because here's the key, Bill. Whenever you have a casino or you have a slot machine, that's a gaming product. Historical horse racing is pari-mutuel wagering. It's our product. It's usually taxed the same way that a traditional wager is taxed. And you're less likely to have a legislature come in and take away some of your gains. You're less likely to have a legislature come in and change the competitive landscape by adding more casinos, because it's racetracks only, it's our product, and I believe it can be the next major source of revenue for our industry.
We'll be back with Corey Johnson, but first, another message from our good friends at TaylorMade.
TaylorMade, the worldwide leader in thoroughbred sales and marketing, is your number one source offering the full spectrum of bloodstock services. With over four decades of experience and the industry's top resources, TaylorMade has the power to help you achieve your loftiest goals. Last year, horses consigned by TaylorMade sold for nearly double the general market average. So if you're looking to get the most for your yearlings, make 2017 the year you give TaylorMade a try. Visit TaylorMadeFarm.com and discover what we can do for you.
Welcome back, Corey. And as we well know, Kentucky Downs has one of the lowest takeout structures in North America, but you could raise it, as we've seen some of your other tracks in Kentucky do it. So on the table, you could say, well, we can make this extra money by raising the takeout, but you don't seem at all inclined to do that. Why not?
When I say this, I'm not being critical of any other track, because it's just something that works for us. We knew, being a five-day meet, that we needed to cut through the clutter. And our goal 5 years ago was to be the horse players racetrack. And in our case, we do have the lowest takeout, overall takeout this year. And in our case, it was to be number one on the Horse Players Association of North America best wagering value. And it was to have the lowest takeout. It's worked for us. But also, I'm hopeful that it will be a catalyst for some change. I hope other tracks will look at us and say, you know what, maybe if we do lower our exacta takeout a little bit, maybe we can get more money. Because I think one of the critical things we did is we lowered the exacta takeout. Now, we could offer a 19% or more exacta takeout. We chose to go to 18.25%. And that was definitely a statement to the industry that the exacta is kind of the staple of the horse player. I mean, you know, and so, you know, how many times, Bill, have you bet an exacta at a major track even, and you think it's going to come back and pay $100 and it pays $80? I mean, it happens all the time. And when you kind of do the math, you understand those high takeouts are cutting into your winnings. And so we wanted to bring that takeout down. It's worked for us, and we're hopeful that other tracks will follow. But I will say this, it's not for every track, and I respect that, because every track is different. They have different schedules, and they've got to make their own decisions.
And Corey, you bring up a lot of good points there, and the fact that you are ranked year after year now number one by HANA, the Horse Players Association of North America, you have been able to say we are the horse players track, absolutely does work for you guys. And just looking at the industry as a whole, and takeout is a very, I wouldn't say controversial subject, but a subject that everybody has differing theories and debates on. Other racetracks have lowered takeout. The horse players have applauded them, and they really haven't seen anything in the way of gains or anything in the way of meaningful gains. Why do you think that is?
Okay. First of all, you have to stick with it, because it took us a few years to get that message out. And for the horse players, you know, they have kind of a show me attitude, which I totally understand. And so they needed to see that, boy, you know, my payoffs are a little bit better at Kentucky Downs. Now, obviously, full fields positively affects payouts as well. But that's one thing. You have to be able to stick with it. And with us, with only 5 days, it's an easy thing. But if you have a track and you're running 60 days and, you know, the horse players don't really find your product, then you've got a problem. Then the other part of it is, Bill, if you just lower your takeout, yet you don't have a particularly good wagering product in terms of either full fields or quality of racing, then those guys that are motivated by takeout may not gravitate to your signal. So those are the two things that I think can negatively impact, you know, lowering of the takeout. I totally understand that it's got to be strategic for every track. And I really applaud, a lot of tracks are going to the lower takeouts on pick fours and pick fives. Mm-hmm. I think it's one of the reasons that those bets have increased in popularity. I mean, I think we did like $500,000 in handle on either a pick four or pick five last year. And 5 or 10 years ago, you were lucky to do 50,000 on a wager like that.
Mm-hmm. And Corey, as you said, you're from the racing standpoint, your handle is, I would guess, 97% simulcasting, something along in that range. So you're really relying on getting this message out. We're the horse players track, big fields, low takeout. And certainly horse players are definitely gravitating towards that because your handle's going up every year. But still, nonetheless, you're going up against the giants, New York, California, Gulfstream Park. How hard has it been, and how hard is it, even with all those advantages, to get people to say, hey, I want to bet on Kentucky Downs today and focus on your track, maybe focus a little bit less on some of the competition, like I just said?
We're getting there. You know, last year on our Kentucky, you know, Turf Cup day, our overall handle was 5.7 million. That's a really, really strong number. And I think we're getting there. And I don't look at kind of competition that way. We actually have many conversations with a Belmont Park to try to make sure that our, you know, post times are complementary to them. And we have found them to be a very good partner mm-hmm. in working together. We also have many conversations with TVG. Mm-hmm. Ted Nicholson is our general manager. You know, he's been in the racing business, as you know, Bill, since the 80s. He grew up right next to Arlington Park. And then my son, CJ, handles the interstate wagering and broadcasting. So those two really do a nice job on working with other tracks. And yeah, we're trying to compete. But frankly, I see our situation a little bit like a college athletic conference. Yeah, you know, you want to beat the other guy, but there are times that you need to work together to increase revenue for the entire conference, or in our case, the entire industry. And that's the approach we try to take.
Okay. Now, Corey, and admirably so, you're so focused on the horse player and making the product good for them. And you have succeeded marvelously with the low takeout in the full fields. But if somebody is listening to this from another track, they say, well, I don't have the advantages that these guys have. I don't have the historical racing machines. I can't run a short boutique-style meet. My horseman would never allow me to run 5 days, which you can do. So what within reason can the industry do, or racetracks that don't have the advantages that you guys have, to make it a better product for the horse player, to do more for the horse player, to get the horse player to bet more money?
Oh, boy, Bill, we could go on for like hours on that one. You know, there's so many things that we can do as an industry working together to make it better for the horse player. You know, sometimes we get hung up on takeout, and we don't talk about some of the other things, which would be like uniform standards in simulcasting and how we maybe have judged the course condition of our turf courses, or when scratches go out to the players and how we communicate with our players. And probably one other thing this is a message to the horsemen and tracks, is that in the old days, you had to have an interesting racing program for people to want to bet on it. And today, sometimes we are so hung up on number of race days that we forget that there are people out there that really do want to bet on our product, but we've got to have quality and full fields and, you know, a reasonable takeout. And I think we need to work and I'm seeing this more and more, we need to work together more on scheduling and making the most out of the number of horses that are out there. And then last but not least, it's very difficult to survive in the industry as a racetrack unless you have some alternative form of revenue. Now, in some states, if you have the sole pari-mutuel license and you get all the revenues from live racing, bricks and mortar OTB, and ADW, you can probably do okay. But in most states, that's not the case. So an alternative form of revenue, which would be gaming, is really essential to move things forward. And I'm hopeful that more and more tracks will take a look at pari-mutuel wagering on historical racing. And it can either be through a statutory approach where you actually change a law, or many times you could take a regulatory approach where you draft rules, pass rules that allow for this. And then all of a sudden you have a product that you can compete with the other, you know, neighboring, let's call it gaming products.
Corey, you mentioned something I want to go back to, and it may seem like a small thing, and I know from previous conversations with you, this is something you're interested in, but as people know, Kentucky Downs is turf racing only. Unfortunately, you had to cancel opening day because of the heavy rains in the area from Hurricane Harvey, but you'll have your full five-day meet, of course. You believe that there is an absolutely accurate way to measure whether a course is firm, good, soft, yielding, et cetera, versus just sort of taking a guess. I found that very interesting, so I'm going to ask you to tell us more about that.
Yes, and so I want to stress this. I'm not here to say that the measurement devices can give you commonality between, say, Belmont Park and Kentucky Downs. But what they can do is they can make Belmont Park or Kentucky Downs or Churchill Downs or Keeneland go out there and do their measurements so there is a scientific basis for calling a track firm or good or yielding or soft. What we need to do is we need to, as an industry, in my opinion, determine what it should be. Is it a clay hammer or is it a going stick, which they're using in England? But that is a critical piece of information that I believe the horse player needs to be able to wager with confidence on turf racing. For example, you know, I've seen it many times and the stewards are doing the best they can, but they'll send the outrider out there and they'll say, Frank, go out and ride the course and what do you think? And he'll radio him back. Yeah, it's a little bit, there's a little cut in the ground and this and that. And they'll say, okay, it's going to be good, right? Well, then all of a sudden the second race goes close to a track record and that should have been firm. Well, my point is that we need to, as I'll call it horse players, demand that all racetracks that have turf courses have some universal measurement and that they make a scientific approach to that. Now, I'm not saying that some tracks don't do that. I can't stress that enough. I'm sure that's happening. But let's make sure everybody's on the same, the same level playing field, so to speak. And I think handle will go up if that happens.
Mm-hmm. Corey, this year at Kentucky Downs, you introduced a new wager called the Jockey 7 wager. So first of all, why don't you just tell the listeners exactly what that is and then follow that up with why you guys decided to add it to this year's wagering menu.
The Jockey 7 provides horse players an opportunity to wager on jockeys and their mounts. And the reason we called it the Jockey 7, it's going to be on the last seven races of every card at Kentucky Downs. So we always have 10 race cards. That's just a normal staple that we have. So the 11th race in your wagering format will be the Jockey 7. So prior to the fourth race, you go to the window and you bet. You say, race 11, I want to bet $5 to win on number 3. Well, let's just say that number 3 happens to be Calvin Burrell and all his mounts for those seven races. As Calvin rides through that card, his horses get 25 points for a win, 12 for a second, 9 for a third, and 5 for a fourth. So at the end of those seven races, you have, in this case, it's a 14 entity field. So you have 13 different jockeys. And then on the 14th race, you have a field. Those are those jockeys with one mount or a long shot, you know, type horses. And so what it does is it allows you to wager on groupings of mounts by jockey. Points determine the winner. And so if I bet to win on Calvin Burrell and he wins three races and has 75 points, based on history, more than likely I'm going to win my win bet and I'm going to get the payoff. It's parimutuel. We actually offer win, play, show, exacta, and trifecta. Bill, it's something we did on a limited basis at Lone Star Park when we used to have the NTRA All-Star Jockey Challenge. It was a little different. It was only four races, and then you had your 12 All-Star jockeys. But it was similar in that those jockeys' mounts got points. The jockey with the most points, or first, second, and third best points, you know, were the ones that paid off. So that's how the wager works. You can go to our website and get more information on that. See, we have scratch time the day before our live races at 9 a.m., and it takes about 3 or 4 hours for us to put up the final field in the Jockey 7. So you go to our website. We're also going to work with Equibase and other entities to get the word on that. And the reason we did it is I believe it's a wager that appeals to everybody that walks through the door at a racetrack. Just think about this, Bill. I'll bet you there are days that you even have walked into a racetrack and maybe not known one horse's name that day, but you were there to handicap the card and have a good time. I guarantee you, though, you knew jockeys that were riding that day. So not only the novice who loves to bet on jockeys, but also the sophisticated horse player who wants to do a lot of research and make a real educated decision, this is a compelling wager. And then last but not least, in the case of Kentucky Downs, and I hope every track that offers this wager, a percentage of the net commissions retained by the track will go to the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund. And Bill, one of the problems we have with many of these causes in our industry, where a lot of people want to get involved and they understand it's the responsibility of everybody from you and me and the horse players and the horsemen and the jockeys to help permanently disabled jockeys. But it's kind of a mishmash of funding, and it's, you know, everything from karaoke to bake sales to silent auctions. Mm-hmm. Well, if there's a way that we can institutionalize the funding mechanism for the PDJF, that is going to be tremendously helpful. So just imagine if down the road, Del Mar or Saratoga or the Breeders' Cup offered the Jockey 7. It doesn't have to be 7, by the way. It could be Jockey 8 or Jockey 4. But if they offered this wager and a small percentage of their net commissions went to the PDJF, that could be a very powerful funding mechanism for a cause that I think virtually, I can't imagine anybody would be against money going to that cause.
Agreed on that. So, Corey, let's go back to the meet and the whole structure of it. And the everything that you have, again, horse players track, a horse player's delight, big purses. So somebody may be saying, well, it's such a good thing. Why don't we have more of it? 5 days is unique. We talk about Saratoga and Del Mar as boutique meets. They're racing 40, 41 days, 42 days. You're racing five. Why just five? And is there ever any discussions of expanding the meet even by a day or two?
Okay, so let me go on record by saying that we would prefer to run 8 to 10 days. We think we have the purse money for it. We think it allows Kentucky horsemen to run at big purse money, you know, and be able to get their horses in. So we would prefer 8 to 10 days. But when I was at Lone Star Park, the chairman of the board down there when I was president was Bob Kaminsky. And Bob always taught me, you know, Corey, spend your time on positive things. You know, don't spend a lot of time on negative energy, so to speak. So about 2 or 3 years ago, we tried to run a few more days and we would apply for them every year. And Keeneland and Churchill were opposed us. And, you know, I respect them because Churchill added the September meet, which I think has been a good thing for Kentucky. And I have tremendous respect for Keeneland and their racing program. I may disagree with them a little bit on the fact that do we really impact them that much, or do we bring more horses to Kentucky and horses stay there year round and it makes their meets, you know, stronger. But at this point in time, we're better off to just apply for our same 5 days. It's worked in nice. It's working. Yes, we do earn more purse money than we can spend in a productive, constructive way. So right now, the horsemen choose to send some money to Ellis Park, which has been a tremendous success for the Kentucky circuit. So to answer your question, yes, we would like to run more days. We would make more money. But we do need to respect that we are part of a circuit, or maybe you call it a college conference. You know, I remember I talked to you about the athletic conference concept, and that you can't always get your way. So, okay, we're going to do the best we can with our 5 days. We'll, along with the horsemen, move the money that we can spend, and then the Kentucky circuit is better. So in the long run, that's my approach. Positive energy, do everything I can to make things better for, in our case, the Kentucky circuit and the overall industry, and that's what you're going
to
see.
There's much more to come with Corey Johnson, but first this message from our sponsor and our good friends at TaylorMade.
Attention sellers, now's the time to start preparing for the upcoming yearling sales, and putting your yearlings on the path to success begins right now. As the worldwide leader in thoroughbred sales and marketing, the expert team at TaylorMade knows what it takes to succeed at public auction. So if you're ready to get top dollar for your yearlings in 2017, visit TaylorMadeFarm.com and discover what we can do for you.
But all the while, Taurus just keeps on motoring away. And look at Taurus. A peek back there from the man of the day for Angelou. He sees Regular Ready back there with the undrafted second and third, but they're not catching him. It's Taurus. How do you say high five in French for Angelou? Five winners today, three straight stakes wins, and he never moved on Taurus.
Corey, you just heard Taurus win the 2015 More Than Ready Stakes at Kentucky Downs. A year later, he went on to win the Breeders' Cup Mile. Not that your racing needed to be put on the map, but how did it feel to see a Breeders' Cup winner come out of Kentucky Downs, and what did it do for Kentucky Downs racing?
It did a tremendous amount, and I've got to, you know, publicly thank Elliot Walden for his support, because he was the one, he called me up and he said, look, we're going to run a really nice horse at your place named Taurus, and I think he's going to run really well. And of course he did, and then went on to do great things. You know, was close to being the turf champion. I'm sure that was close to being a toss up for many voters. So that did put us on the map. And I've always appreciated that. And then, you know, we get anywhere from 10 to 13 horses that actually run at Kentucky Downs and then run in a Breeders' Cup event. So we're very proud of that. We're also proud of the fact and thankful that the Graded Stakes Committee made a decision to award us with two more graded stakes. So now we have three. And looking at some of the horses that are expected to run over the next, you know, 5 days, we could get some more grades. I really hope so. And I think we deserve it. And so we'll look forward to that. But yes, the tourist thing, that really put us on the map. I tell you, there's a number of horsemen that have been really supportive of Kentucky Downs, even before we had the real big money. I mean, you know, Ken Ramsey's been admittedly, he's the leading owner for the last 4 years, but he was running horses at our place when our purses weren't that extraordinary. And so we've got a ton of people in Kentucky that have supported us through the years, and it's fun, or it's gratifying for me to see them now win, you know, $130,000 maiden special weight races.
And Corey, you mentioned the Graded Stakes Committee, and you're an optimistic guy, and you turned something that I think maybe is a negative into a positive. I'm going to take the opposite approach. You can look at the history of your stakes races and the amount of money that you give away, and this is me saying it, not you, but I think that to only have three graded stakes and all of them the grade three, I'm not so sure the graded stakes committee has been that kind to Kentucky Downs. Are you at all frustrated about it, or do you just think it's a matter of time that you do get more graded stakes and maybe some of those grade threes become grade twos?
I hope so. I think that's the next step, is to have some grade threes become grade twos. I think we're really close. To their credit, they try to use as much, you know, math analysis as they can in the process. And I don't know, candidly, I haven't really been that frustrated. I know they have a really difficult job, and I think that we took an important next step last year, and I'm hopeful we can, you know, take the next step, you know what I mean, this, you know, for 2018, I hope. But I'm okay with it, Bill. That's a tough job. And I know a lot of people on that committee, and they are really good people that love the game and want to do what's right. So I think it'll all work out. You know, the one thing I've had to do, Bill, is understand that we're growing. You know, we were somewhat of a non-entity 5 or 6 years ago in the national racing scene. And the fact that, you know, we're growing, it just takes time. And that's one of the things that taught me a little patience, which is good. And as you know, I'm an optimist. So I'm looking forward to bigger and better things in graded stakes and a number of other areas. I mean, some of the best jockeys in the world are going to be riding at our track, you know, over the next 5 days. I mean, it's, and just imagine this Jockey 7 wager. You know, if you're from New York, you're going to be able to bet on Jose Ortiz. And if you're from Florida, Tyler Gaffleone's going to be in there. And usually Drayden Van Dyke comes from California, and maybe Flavian Pratt, you know, closing day will be here. I mean, it's going to be a blast.
And Corey, getting back to what you're talking about, Ellis Park, more details, the $1.65 million of purse money generated from the Kentucky Downs entity goes to supplement purses at Ellis Park. And that's a joint venture between the horsemen and yourself and your management team. Everybody's on board. You talk a lot about the importance of these sort of things, racetrack managements and horsemen not bickering, not fighting, but working together for the common good of the sport. And you're talking the talk and walking the walk, no doubt about it, with the Ellis Park maneuver. But why is this whole horseman track relations issue something that is so important to you and something you talk about so much?
Yeah. First of all, the Kentucky HBPA has a group of leaders that are second to none. They've been just really outstanding to work with. So that's kind of number one. Number two, in Kentucky, we have an organization that, frankly, more states need, and that's KEEP, or the Kentucky Equine Education Project. And what that does is that brings together all breeds, all disciplines, thoroughbred, quarter horse, standard bred, and we all sit around a table and we try to make the economics better for our sport. And it was founded by a group, John Gaines, Governor Brereton Jones, Bill Kasner. I mean, I'm going to leave a few out. But they saw a need where, this is an interesting stat I've used before. In 2005, the approval rating for the thoroughbred breeding and racing industries in Kentucky was at 42%. Now, that is hard to believe when you think about what that industry means to the state. 42%. Well, after 10 years of educating the public, the legislators, it's now at 72%, where it should be. In the old days, we were just considered to be a bunch of rich guys that lived in Lexington. Well, now people understand that it's tens of thousands of jobs and billions of dollars of economic annual impact. And that has helped us tremendously. But it also, we all got to sit around the table and we all got to work out problems, and we're all communicating. Whereas, Bill, as you know, in some states, one of the biggest problems is you have one breed fighting with another, and you got the horsemen fighting with the tracks. And if you have communication out there, that's the quickest way to compromise, understand the other person's issues, and come to some type of solution that's in the best interest of the industry. So there's a long answer, but it deserves a long answer, because Kentucky is exceptional. As a matter of fact, one of the reasons that we bought Kentucky Downs is I came to Kentucky and I spent time with the people at Keep, and I was so impressed with the effort that I said to my partner, Ray Reed, I said, "Ray, if any state is going to get some additional form of gaming, it's going to be Kentucky, because they've got this foundation of an organization and they all work together." And that was the case, because we would not be open today. We would not have historical horse racing if it weren't for Keep and the efforts of that organization in 2010, 11, and, you know, finally getting the HHR approved.
Okay. Corey, in a recent podcast, we had Bill Thomason from Keeneland on, and he said many of the same things you said about the importance, not just of his racetrack, Keeneland, but of Kentucky racing as a whole. And he was talking about the entirety of Kentucky racing needs to be solid. You need to have a solid year-round circuit. Again, some of the things that you have just been saying. You guys have contributed the money to Ellis Park to help them. I think the weak link right now in Kentucky racing, and no fault of their own, because they really have the deck stacked against them, is Turfway Park. We just seen that the Jim Beam Stakes, the Spiral Stakes, that's a name that changes quite often, has been taken out of the Kentucky Derby point system. Any thoughts on what the industry in Kentucky can do to help that racetrack, which seems to be the one that really does need a lifeline right now?
I know the group that owns and runs Turfway, and I believe they're sincere in that they want to develop a 500 terminal historical horse racing facility, I mean, within the grandstand. And I think it's going to happen. They're a large company, you know, Jack Entertainment, which is, you know, Dan Gilbert, Quicken Loans, Cleveland Cavaliers. But they have some very interesting plans. They ran into a little snafu. They had an engineering situation they had to deal with at Turfway. But I think sooner than later, they're going to be in the game as well. And they've been approved for historical horse racing. So I think that weak link, I think, will get corrected within maybe as quick as 12 months.
Okay.
And Bill, as you know, Churchill Downs was approved for a number of historical horse racing terminals. So they're in the process of, you know, developing a facility at the Sports Spectrum, the old Sports mm-hmm. Spectrum. And when that happens, I believe they're going to do fantastic, because it's a great location. People really don't want to go across that river. Mm-hmm. And I think they'll stay home. It'll be a nice facility. It'll be well run. And then that money, you know, will supplement their purses, because, you know, we need not just $130,000 maiden special weight purses at Kentucky Downs. You know, we need that kind of purses at Keeneland and Churchill, and we need Ellis Park and Turfway to have $40,000 or $50,000 mm-hmm. purses, including, you know, KTDF. That's what this circuit needs if we're going to maximize it. And I believe the leaders at those tracks understand that.
Very good. Corey Johnson, very insightful interview. I don't know when people will be listening to this, but we're recording this before the new opening day of Kentucky Downs, which will be this Wednesday coming up, the first week in September. Have a great meet. Have a great handle. Have great racing. And thanks for all you guys do to promote not only racing in Kentucky, but racing across the globe. We want to thank TaylorMade as well for sponsoring this week's Thoroughbred Daily News podcast.